Chapter 20, The Race. While Dodd lay thinking, covered in leaves, his heart began to pound faster and faster. "Promise me, Dodd, promise me," echoed in his mind. Bombu's pleading eyes haunted him. The answers to so many questions, so many secrets Bombu wanted to share, were hidden, and the key word to acquire the two pieces of the map was entrusted to Dodd alone, Dossum. "We've got to go to Lower Janus," said Dodd, breaking the 10 minutes of silence. "What?" asked Boot, answering in a choked-up voice that revealed he had been crying. "We need to go to Lower Janus, first thing in the morning. I promised Bombu I would do something when he passed away." "The carriage ride, right, you need to get the maps," said Boot, gaining composure. "Are you going to share the secrets with me? After all, I know the word too, Hopos." "He changed it," responded Dodd cautiously, not really wanting to go into detail on how he knew and Boot didn't. "It's not Hopos anymore, although I'm sure I'll be able to share many of the secrets with you." Dodd's voice then altered as he attempted to lift the tragedy from Boot's mind with a subdued joke. It was awkward. "Of course, I'll need to look them over first. Maybe there's a reason he doesn't want very many people to know them. They could be all sorts of bad things about me." Dodd and Boot crawled slowly out of the dirt and leaves. Guards no longer stood anywhere near them, but a few glowing torches glimmered in the distance. Soldiers were stationed along the castle wall, making a return through the bedroom window impossible. "It's just as well that we can't go back," said Boot, sounding like a boy with a skinned knee who was trying to shake it off, or at least hide his sore feelings. "If I'm going to Lower Janus with you, to visit Higa, we'll need to leave in a couple of hours anyway, before the sun rises, because under no circumstance will I be caught missing Mercy's morning banquet." "That's easy for you to say," replied Dodd. He opened his cloak. While Boot couldn't see very much, he knew exactly what Dodd was complaining about. He was wearing pajamas. "Don't worry about it," assured Boot. "We'll look good together. You in your pajamas, and me in my muddy getup." "A sleeper and a slob," mumbled Dodd. The two friends crept into the barn and found a soft bed of straw in the loft. Both of them were still sad inside, dreading the reality of Bombu's passing, especially Boot. Bombu had been like a father to Boot for over 30 years, so once he thought Dodd was asleep, he began to cry quietly again. In the morning, when the farthest corners of the sky were starting to turn a light bluish-orange, and while the rest of the canopy was a sea of dimming stars, Boot awakened Dodd and helped him onto a saddled horse. "Won't Dilly be mad?" asked Dodd, noticing through his half-opened eyes that the horse Boot had selected for both of them to ride was Song. "She'll understand," said Boot confidently. "If my horse hadn't run off, we'd be riding him. Besides, this is Jungo." "Jungo?" said Dodd. The word sounded vaguely familiar, yet slipped Dodd's sleepy mind. "We're out for revenge," grumbled Boot. "Whoever did this horrible thing to Bombu will pay. And since I'm nearly his blood, Jungo would apply. I'll see things are made fair for the family, even if it's the last thing I do. I'm not afraid of the Dread or any of his filthy friends, so let's meet them. Jungo! Jungo! Jungo!" By the time Boot got to the chant of Jungo, at the end of his disclosure, a shining sword waved in the air. "Where did you get that from?" gasped Dodd, wondering how Boot had managed to secure a sword, saddle a horse, and plan for a family's revenge, all in the dark while Dodd slept. "I'm borrowing it," replied Boot. "Sirlonk has a small cache of a half a dozen of them in a little box he hides under the back log lining of his horse's stall. I once saw him resort to it when trouble came knocking 6 years ago. Anyway, we can return them before he ever notices they're gone." "We?" "Here," said Boot, pointing at a second sword he had stowed in one of two sheaths that dangled from the front of the saddle. "I assume you'll join me in any fancy fighting?" "Sure, count on me," said Dodd boldly. However, his insides didn't feel as confident in his own ability to use a sword as his voice seemed to indicate. But Boot's zeal for Jungo appeared big enough to handle anything, so Dodd determined that the least he could do was to speak the part of a faithful friend, even if he didn't have the skills to pull his fair weight. "Last night I couldn't sleep much," said Boot, nudging Song into a trot. "I thought and thought until my brain hurt. At first I was mostly sad, but after a while my sorrow turned to anger. How dare someone take Bombu from us? And for what?" Boot glanced at Dodd with determined eyes. "That's when it dawned on me," he continued. "The Dread knows about the map and the secrets, and he wants to claim them for himself. The kind of things Bombu has kept hidden would be devastating if the Dread got his hands on them. I bet he'll magically show up today in Lower Janus, trying to trick Higa into giving him her half of the map, And when he does, we'll be there, waiting. He'll pay for what he's done. Dot had never heard Boot speak with such conviction. It was almost as if Boot had aged a few decades during the night. His plan for meeting the Dread was genius, and his courage to confront him was noble. "I'll follow whatever you've got planned," said Dodd. "Just let me know what you want me to do."
"First things first," responded Boot, giving orders like a general. "When we get to Lower Janus, you go in and get the map, bring it out, and we'll hide it in the woods. After we know it's safe, we'll keep an eye on Higa the rest of the day. When someone comes for the map, it'll be time to interrogate." Boot patted his sword. Jungo was filling his mind.
"So won't bother you if we miss Mercy's morning celebration of Rainfall Day?" asked Dodd with surprise.
"Jungo is more important than fancy food," said Boot, taking a deep breath of morning air. "Justice needs to be served, and I'm more than ready to dish it out. Besides, family honor requires it."
The ride to Lower Janus took less time than Dodd's first encounter with the road. As they passed the spot where Bamboo's carriage had almost launched off Drop's cliff, memories flooded back. Dodd shook his head in unison with Boot.
"If only Bamboo had taken the attempts more seriously," groaned Dodd.
"Then he wouldn't have been Bamboo," sighed Boot.
The two rode in silence. It was fitting. The world around them was peaceful. Even the pastures and barnyards surrounding Lower Janus seemed respectfully quiet, as if they were soldiers paying tribute to their fallen captain. In the city, early morning mist filled the air, awaiting sunrise. Dogs and kids were still asleep, and the only sounds that could be heard were coming from a few barns where cows were being milked. After trotting through the streets for 10 minutes, heading toward Higa's house, Boot broke the silence.
"Bamboo's not the only one this town will be mourning today."
Boot pointed at piles of rocks positioned on porches and front steps of homes and businesses. Dot hadn't noticed them before, yet when Boot brought them to his attention, he remembered they were a symbol of respect, honoring a newly deceased loved one. Higa's dwelling had 2 piles of rocks on her front stairs and another large pile on her porch.
"When you're in there, make sure to ask Higa who died," said Boot, helping Dot off song. "I'll wait here for you."
"Shouldn't we hold back a while?" asked Dot uncomfortably. "It looks as if she's still asleep, like the rest of this town. I would hate to wake her up early on a holiday, and with bad news.
Maybe we could rest in the park over there."
"Not until we have her half of the map. She'll understand. And don't scare her about the Dread coming to visit her. We'll keep an eye out for him. There's little need of her worrying all day. It will be bad enough for her to hear about Bamboo. Perhaps you could tell her we're not exactly sure how he died. That could soften the news."
Dodd's knees knocked together as he climbed Higa's stairs. He wasn't afraid of Higa, but delivering such bad news and then promptly needing to ask for the map seemed rude.
"Are you sure you don't want to tether Song to the front post and join me?" asked Dodd, pleading with his eyes.
"Nope," responded Boot. "I need to keep a close eye on Dilly's horse. And what about the Dread?
And besides, Bamboo's system was specifically set up with one recipient. If we both approach her, and I know she's a rule keeper to the smallest detail, she might not give it to us. You need to do your part. Do what you promised Bamboo."
Boot's statements were scattered and sounded like excuses. Nonetheless, they were the truth, and Dodd knew it.
Knock, knock. The sound echoed into the streets. If it were any other time of day, the knocking may have gone unnoticed. However, with the stillness of the morning, even a butterfly's flapping would be audible.
"Yes," said a voice through the door. "Come on in. It's not locked."
Dodd entered the house and found Higa propped up by pillows. Her portly frame was stretched out on an oversized drip chair in her disorderly entry room. Dodd uncomfortably eyed the scene. Higa's parlor had walls that were covered with misaligned paintings of important people, including Bamboo and Serlonk. 2 intricately worked oak bookshelves, which leaned precariously away from each other, held medals and awards of every shape and size, as well as a number of statues that were likely gifts of appreciation for her remarkable service. In the corner, a glass case was encrusted in dust and filled eccentrically with medical apparatuses that looked outdated and barbaric. Stealing the bulk of the room, a disproportionately large coffee table was buried under stacks of books and piles of papers, which drooped in every imaginable direction, and, consequently, littered the floor with educational debris. It was a cluttered room that matched perfectly Higa's disheveled appearance.
"I'm sorry for the way I look," apologized Higa, pulling at her crumpled curls and glancing down at the wrinkled outfit she wore. Most of it was hidden by a sea of colorful cushions. Her face was reddened and puffy, especially below her eyes.
I should have gone up to sleep last night. I just never did, sighed Higa. You're fine, said Dodd softly, not showing the feeling of panic that was growing inside. I'm the one that needs to apologize. I'm sorry for bothering you so early in the morning, and on a holiday. It's a holiday, squeaked Higa sleepily. Oh, yes. Now I remember. I can't believe I forgot. Today's rainfall day, isn't it? I'm not much good this morning. She shifted in her chair stiffly, knocking some of her pillows to the jumbled floor, where they nearly concealed a half-rolled, dirty map of Sush. After yesterday's painful news, continued Higa with the frog in her throat, I cried hard enough to forget about most everything else. Who died? Asked Dodd cautiously. You don't know? Gasped Higa, looking shocked. Oh, lad, where have you been? I hardly expected to be the one telling you of such sorrow. Bamboo's been killed. Messengers bearing his ring came from Twistyard last night as the sun was setting. Dodd dropped to his knees in bewilderment. The dread had already done his work. Dodd knew Higa had given up the map. His heart told him, but he had to ask. Higa, said Dodd quietly, and then he paused to think of the right words to say. When none came to his mind, he finally blurted very clearly, Dossum. What, son? Asked Higa. Dossum. I'm here at Bamboo's request, said Dodd, cringing because he sensed it was hopeless. I'm sorry, son, but I don't understand what you're asking, said Higa, squinting down her nose at Dodd. She shifted, knocking more pillows to the floor. The air in the room felt heavier than when Dodd first entered, making it hard to speak. Dossum, sputtered Dodd. It's Bamboo's secret code word, so you'll know I'm the one he's chosen to pick up your half of the map, the one he entrusted to you. My goodness, son, exclaimed Higa defensively. The word's not Dossum. She sat up straight in her chair, revealing brownish stains on the burgundy riding outfit that she wore, and looked concerned for her life. Why are you doing this? Begged Higa keenly. He didn't choose you. Yes, he did, protested Dodd. I promised him I would ask you for your half and Dilly for hers. How do you know so much? Muttered Higa, scowling callously. What have you done to Bamboo? Me? Wheezed Dodd, completely stunned. He felt like a fist had just punched the air out of him, so he took a huffing breath and fought back. I haven't done anything, argued Dodd, his voice trembling. I might well ask you the same question. How did you find out about Bamboo's passing before anyone at Twistyard? And why are you sleeping down here, dressed and all dirty from who knows what mischief? It seems like you knew early enough to come trotting up here in the dark of the morning, said Higa, drenched with bitterness. If all of Twistyard doesn't know... She paused while her eyes narrowed to slits. Then how did you find out? And the messengers. I heard them with my own two ears. All of us did. They were sent from Twistyard to declare the unhappy tidings of Bamboo's passing. Higa jumped to her feet, unbelievably agile for her body type, and grabbed for a sword that was concealed behind her chair. She pointed it in Dodd's direction and said coldly, Now tell me everything you know, or I'll mush you out. I promise I will. I'm telling the truth, choked Dodd in disbelief. The very woman who had helped to save his life now appeared determined to end it. Higa moved closer, unconvinced by anything Dodd had said, and whistled a shrill peep. Two black snarling dogs as big as mountain lions thundered down the stairs and came to stand, one on each side of her, right on top of the books and papers that littered the carpet. I don't know what's happened, cried Dodd, wishing Boot would burst through the door to his rescue. He mustered his strength and looked her in the eyes, hoping his face would draw sympathy. If you've already given the map to anyone else, he said slowly, you've been tricked. I wasn't tricked, roared Higa like a horrendous beast. She was scarier and louder than the dogs that now barked ferociously. You're lying! You better confess! Now tell me the truth! I am, said Dodd, hardly able to be heard over the noise. He jumped to his feet and made for the door when one of the devil dogs blocked his way, showing its sharp teeth. And when Dodd spun around to plead for help, a cold blade pressed at his throat. The tip nearly drew blood. With little effort, Higa could finish him off, mush him out as she had promised. Dodd raised his weaponless arms in the air and begged, You're making a huge mistake, Higa. Bamboo made me promise him that I would go after the map. I don't want it. I'm just doing this to keep my word, and in hopes of stopping whoever killed him. He actually made me promise twice, once in Pap's house when he told me he had changed the word to Dossum, and once before that, while on a carriage ride. The word originally was hopas. Higa lowered her sword slowly and looked puzzled. The dogs went silent, instinctively reading her actions.
"You know hopas?" whispered Higa.
"Yes, I know hopas," said Dodd, nodding. "I'm telling you the truth."
Higa whistled a low-pitched chirping signal, and the guards of the house scampered back upstairs, their tails between their legs.
"He never told me he changed it," said Higa mournfully.
"Maybe it was on his long list of things to do," suggested Dodd in a frenzied voice. "His nerves were shot. You know how busy Bamboo's been lately," he added, trying to force a friendly smile.
Higa dropped her sword and started to cry. She became the Higa Dodd had expected.
A few minutes passed, with Higa blubbering and Dodd trying to comfort her. She was so consumed by grief over letting Bamboo down that she couldn't speak more than two words without sobbing loudly and shaking. It was a challenge to Dodd, who wanted to leave but wasn't about to go until she could answer his questions. Finally, after Dodd had distracted her attention to the shelves filled with honor she had received, reminding her that everyone, including Bamboo, was proud of all the good she had done, her weeping slowed enough to broach the issue of the night before.
"Can you tell me who came for the map?" asked Dodd carefully. It was like he was tiptoeing on a bridge of eggs.
"He was... well, it was dark, and I was out on my front porch," mumbled Higa between tears.
"Okay," said Dodd, prodding her gently.
"Good, that's good. What else can you remember?"
Two men rode up, and one came and whispered hopas quietly.
"What did they look like?" asked Dodd, jumping in too quickly.
"I don't know," barked Higa, beginning to sob harder again. "It was dark, or I wasn't looking, or I was crying. I just don't know."
"Can you remember anything about them?" begged Dodd, feeling discouraged. He knew Boot would be terribly disappointed if Higa couldn't at least point them in the right direction.
"The man that approached me and told me hopas, he comforted me with a few kind words about Bamboo. He knew all sorts of things, memories and stuff."
"So he was close to Bamboo," said Dodd.
"I think," admitted Higa, almost containing her tears. She reflected back momentarily and then burst out again.
"Oh, why did I give it to him? I didn't even see who it was."
"Don't be sad," said Dodd sympathetically. "We've all been tricked by the same deceiver. It's the dread." Dodd patted Higa on the shoulder and smiled. A burst of inspiration filled his mind with a straight course of action.
"Everything's going to be all right," he said. "Your half's no good without the other half, and I know for a fact that Dilly hasn't given up hers yet. We'll stop him."
"Dilly?" said Higa, momentarily less sad and more pensive. "She has the other half?"
"Right," said Dodd. Without further conversation, he slipped out the door, sped down the stairs, and rushed across the road to where Boot was standing next to Song, beneath the giant willow.
"We've got to hurry," said Dodd breathlessly.
"Do you have it?" asked Boot.
"No, that's why we need to hurry. We've been played."
"What?" gasped Boot. "Then why were you going through all that chanting and yelling? I thought you were doing some proof of rights to get the map."
"Hardly," said Dodd. "You don't even want to know what that was."
"Then who has it?" demanded Boot, mounting Song with a leap.
"The dread," said Dodd. "He came last night, had some accomplices announce Bamboo's passing, showing a ring."
"Like the family ring means anything," groaned Boot. "Dilly has two or three of them, and I even have one."
"Well, it worked for him," said Dodd.
Shortly after the announcement, which supposedly came from Twistyard messengers, two men rode up. One asked Higa nicely, giving the old word, and she was grieved enough to hand it over without any questions.
"Who were they?" demanded Boot, getting agitated. He looked like he couldn't decide whether to ride away or bolt into Higa's house for some advanced interrogating.
"She must have recognized them," he said, red-faced.
"No," replied Dodd. He put his hand in the air and had Boot help him to his place on the back of Song.
"That's the most frustrating part. She didn't get a good look at the people. It was too dark, and she was too upset."
Boot groaned loudly. His plan for identifying the dread was already foiled, and despite his quick actions, the master of deception was one step ahead. But before Boot could say another word, Dodd spoke up, fighting to hold back his enthusiasm.
"Let's see how fast Song can run," suggested Dodd nonchalantly.
"To where?" asked Boot in a hopeless voice, still pondering his failed plan.
"To Dilly," said Dodd, smiling big. "We need to protect her. She's got the last half of the map. The dread will seek her out next,
and we need to be there, waiting. Jungle, right?
Boot bubbled with pride and rapped Dodd on the shoulder, saying, "Good man, Dodd, good man."
Mud flew in the air as Song ran back toward Twistyard. Boot and Dodd spoke about the various people they suspected, citing clues that pointed one way or another. In the end, however, notwithstanding most of the evidence suggested the Dread was someone they knew, he still remained a mystery. With the sun up, Boot felt comfortable taking shortcuts. He left the main road many times, trotting through fields and forests. At one point, a particular thicket became bothersome enough that Dodd pulled his legs up and crossed them behind Boot, Indian style, to prevent bushes and trees from tearing through his thin pajama legs. It would have been a good idea if he had also increased his grip on Boot. But not wanting to create an uncomfortable situation by holding him tightly, Dodd lost his place and tumbled off the horse. Grump! On the way to the ground, one sharp branch grabbed the bottom of Dodd's cloak and tore it straight up the side, 3/4 of the way to his collar. An inner pocket also burst and sent small supplies flying everywhere. Boot promptly stopped Song and came back to help Dodd up, yet when he saw a 4-foot pine tree wearing a myriad of things from the broken pocket, he couldn't help reverting back to his typical, though more somber, teasing self. "You'd give all of that to the tree and none to me," jabbed Boot. "At least let me have the chew yummy. That pine wouldn't appreciate it the way I would." Dodd grinned when he noticed the sapling. It looked like a poorly decorated Christmas tree. "You can have it. It's my present to you," responded Dodd, handing up the chocolate-like treat. "Thanks. Chew yummy's just what my stomach is growling for," said Boot, hopping out of the saddle. He began picking things off the branches and handing them to Dodd. A white and blue handkerchief, a small ball of twine, a Belurse globe, a strand of red ribbon, a half-eaten cookie, a couple of sugar sticks, a bright blue sock, a well-used candle, a lucky feather charm, and a mostly eaten block of chew yummy. "Really, you can eat the chew yummy," insisted Dodd when Boot tried to hand it to him.
"Besides, I don't have enough room to fit all of this in my other pocket." Dodd ate the rest of his cookie as a show that he had split the food fairly, so Boot didn't need to feel bad eating the chew yummy.
"You sure packed supplies," remarked Boot, helping Dodd to his feet.
"You never know when it will come in handy," said Dodd. "As a matter of fact, it says right here."
Dodd paused while he produced from his overstuffed remaining pocket the book Commendus had given him. He flipped through the pages, trying to find a particular quote.
"Here it is. You never know what junk from your pockets will become treasures. See? We're proving this book right. A half-eaten cookie and a bit of chew yummy taste better now than they ever would have tasted at the castle."
"Gah!" gagged Boot. "Except for the hair."
"Sorry about that. My pocket has been crawling with them ever since I carried Dilly's hair clip, and I've tried to clean it out, honestly."
Dodd looked down at the pages of his book while closing it up. Suddenly, the way the morning sun caught the paper revealed something amazing. Indentations. Pap had written a note and used the book as a table, and since the paper was soft, marks were left, disclosing parts of the sentences where Pap had pressed harder.
"What a clue," exclaimed Dodd. "You've got to hear this, Boot."
"Bamboo, I fear that we may have a traitor among us.
The Dread.
So I'm writing to allow you.
Gets to you. Please be careful. Don't tell anyone else about.
But by knowing, you may at least watch him more closely, particularly because you have trusted him with Twistyard.
Very dangerous.
And his son, too. I hope that I am.
Ever your friend, Pap."
"Who is it?" asked Boot. "Who is Pap writing about? Did he include the name of the person he suspected to be the Dread?"
"Not that I can see," said Dodd, twisting the book every which way. "You take a look."
Boot and Dodd turned the book back and forth in the light, trying to glean a few more words from the indentations. They particularly hoped to find the name of the person Pap was describing. Unfortunately, it wasn't readable.
"I bet this note cost Pap his life," said Dodd, shaking his head.
"You're probably right," agreed Boot. "Somehow, the Dread knew Pap had figured him out, and so he killed him."
"At least this gives us a few clues," said Dodd, putting the pieces together in his mind. "The Dread is someone at Twistyard, someone with a son, and..."
"It's Zernian Jib," blurted Boot.
"What, are you sure?"
"It has to be," Zerti said, Boot confidently in his angry voice. "And he's working with his son, Jib. I remember Bomboo saying that he trusted Zerni with Twistyard. He's been Bomboo's head keeper of the grounds for, well, it seems like forever. And you've seen the way Dilly and Sonny trust him."
"I know," said Dodd, nodding.
"Not to mention," blurted Boot, his neck muscles tightening, "is it just a coincidence that Zerni and Jib are the ones that came back in one piece, announcing Bomboo's death? Why didn't they bring his body back with them? Or at least have wounds to prove they fought valiantly? I'd have been bloody and tied to a flat before deserting Bomboo like they did."
"I've been saying it all along," said Dodd, tucking his book back into his pocket. "Zerni gives me the creeps. He acts nice and polite around Bomboo and Dilly. But believe me, he was a completely different person when he bailed out with the horses and left us to die. He's definitely the man with the scar, the one that locked the carriage and cut the riggings."
Boot reached up and drew a sword from its sheath.
"Jungo! Jungo! Jungo!" he chanted. "The race is on! We shall make things right before the sun sets today!"
Dodd pulled the other sword and echoed Boot's chant. Magic filled the air. The dread was known, and although he wouldn't be easy to stop, Boot and Dodd were ready to confront him. Song ran faster than usual, almost like he, too, sensed the urgent task that lay ahead. Dodd and Boot were on a mission to stop Zerni and Jib before they finished their dirty deeds at Twistyard. Unfortunately, as Song entered the open courtyard, crowds of people scurrying around the grounds seemed to indicate the calamity had already struck.